Welcome to the Untold Stories of Central Minnesota. This is Arts and Cultural Heritage producer Jeff Carmack. And have you ever found yourself wandering in the woods and you come across maybe a low concrete wall or some other structures that the forest has grown back around and reclaimed? Well, if you have, there's a good chance you're wandering through a ghost town. There are lots of ghost towns around Minnesota. In fact, there are hundreds of them. And in today's installment of the Untold Stories of Central Minnesota, we'll be talking with an expert on ghost towns, author Rhonda Fox. Rhonda's written 3 books about the ghost towns in Minnesota, and she's always glad to talk about them. In fact, this Sunday, September 27th, she's going to be at the Morrison County Historical Society in Little Falls, and then on October 7th, she'll be in Long Prairie at the Public Library, both times discussing her books. But today, we've got her on the phone to discuss ghost towns. So, welcome to the Untold Stories of Central Minnesota, Rhonda.
Well, thank you. It is a fun topic, and the stories, I'm so glad I was able to save these lost towns. So,
yes, exactly. The ghost towns. This is something that's it's always been part of like the American mystique, and all that. How did you get into becoming an expert on ghost towns?
Actually, a couple of reasons. First of all, my grandmother back in 1910 homesteaded in Montana in a town called Purewater, Montana, and it's long, long gone. But when I was younger, she would try to tell me stories about her time in this little lost town. And of course, when you're 10 years old, 8 years old, you don't really pay much attention to what your grandmother's telling you about past times. And so I didn't catch those stories, and now she's long gone, so those stories are gone. But the real thing that got it was my grandparents in Wisconsin up by the Michigan border owned a piece of property, or on their property once sat a lost town. It was an old logging town called Emerson, and it was owned by 3 Emerson brothers, and there was a tornado that went through in the 1890s, and some of the Emersons were killed, and so the town just packed up and moved. And when I was younger, we used to walk back in the back 40, they called it, and you could see the depressions, and we would find old bottles and stuff. Funny thing is that Emerson was a dry town, but the only bottles we ever found were alcohol bottles from about 1890s, 1880s. So that was real fun, and that stuck with me. And as I would get older, I'd notice these towns as I drive through them. I'd think, gee, I wonder what the story is of that. Even up on the north shore of Minnesota, there's a town called Taconite Harbor. It's right between Duluth and Grand Marais, and it used to be a settlement in the 1950s, 1960s, 70s. Erie Mining built a little settlement for their workers, and that disappeared in the 1990s. Hmm. And that to me was kind of shocking because I thought they were all long ago towns. And to think that towns disappeared in my lifetime was kind of eye-opening.
Yeah, that's one of those things. You think of ghost towns, you think of like the Old West, and something just vanished. And you know, that was something I was going to ask. It's like, what about modern ghost towns? You know,
and we do have some of them. Even just north of Little Falls is the little town of Lincoln. Used to be a bustling little village, and all that's left there now is the old church from 1912. They have services there once a year, and then a couple buildings, and the old school. And Public TV did a special on that, and it's actually on tomorrow night again. So,
oh, nice.
They're just kind of, you can see remnants of them, but you never in your mind would imagine that, you know, 300-400 people lived there, and it was bustling, and stores and restaurants, so it was just, it's always surprising to me to come across one of these towns.
Yeah, well, a lot of these, you know, these towns are unique in their own right, but what is one of the major causes, or what happens to a town that causes it to become a ghost town?
One of the things that I was surprised about was the rural free delivery. When the post office in 1893 decided to try rural free delivery across America, and they thought it was so much better to have one mail person deliver mail to the 300 or 400 or 500 people in the area rather than all those people coming to town once a week to get their mail. And it does work very well, but of course when you don't have the 400 people coming to town once a week, the customer base was gone.
Huh.
And so the towns just couldn't survive that loss of people coming to town.
Yeah, you think about it, these folks are out in the country, they're on farms, they're doing whatever, and yeah, it's one of those simple things where it's like, well, if you know, you don't have to go into town, why go into town? You're going to stay working.
Right.
But that whole idea of coming into town, well.
Right. And then also a lot of towns were lost, too, because the railroad service stopped. you know, it used to be a busy, bustling place. Things would be shipped out of town there. They used to have a town about every 8 miles along the rail tracks. And if you follow even through all of Minnesota, you'll see a little town or a little remnant of a town about every 8 miles because trains had to take on water. And then also they figured that was the ideal distance for a farmer to get to town and back within one day. So they would have these shipping points about every 8 miles and villages would grow around them.
And then things changed. Technology changed.
Right. And the automobile came into use and trucking came into use. So the rail traffic totally fell off. And as you get to southern Minnesota, it started with the stagecoach. And when the stagecoach was replaced by the train, that the stagecoach towns died out and the train towns grew up. And then as the highways became our major transportation mode, the railroad towns died off. So,
Nice. So have any of these ghost towns come back to life?
I don't know if they, I'm trying to think of what might come back to life. The ones I've come across really haven't. You know, they might have a resurgence of being mainly residential, areas that came back residential, or I'm trying to think of any, and none's popping into my head right away that I would say came back.
Mm. Yeah, that's kind of the feel I got, too. I was mentioning to a couple of folks around the station here that I was going to be interviewing you about the ghost towns, and our operations manager Jim Gray kind of perked up, and he's like, "Well, I'm living in a ghost town now, Center Valley."
Center Valley is actually in my new book that came out this year. So,
nice. Well, yeah. There's a resident there. And I...
okay.
Well,
yeah, another reason too was in before the days of refrigeration, nearly every town had to have a creamery to keep. To process the milk and stuff, and I believe Center Valley had a well-known creamery. There was a fire at one time, or an explosion at one time, where the butter maker was severely injured, and I believe he died. But no, Center Valley was one of the creamery towns, and like I said, all of them had creameries. So
yeah, there's all these different things that the different towns have, and then something goes wrong or something changes, then all of a sudden everybody leaves.
You know? Right, and everything was kind of, you know, especially like in logging towns or something, if the whole town economy is based on one thing, when that one thing is gone, they couldn't diversify enough to make it go. You know, for instance, if you were a logging town and the logs were all cut from that area, that there was no reason for the workers to be there anymore. And without the workers, the businesses didn't have to be there. And it was kind of just this little vicious cycle.
Yeah, once it starts, it's just, you know, poof.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, that almost makes me think of, you know, there's the explosion at the paper mill in Sartell. And, you know, that was a major employer in Sartell. You know, a lot of other folks have got other jobs there. It's not, you know, there's the town isn't exactly dependent upon that paper mill, but it definitely takes a big chunk.
It does take a big hit, but no, with automobiles and stuff and being able to go further nowadays, you can, you know, make adjustments. The town's still going to suffer, but in the olden days, you didn't have the diversity to adjust. People had no way to go except pack up and move.
So kind of shifting gears just a little bit, with about how many ghost towns are there in Minnesota?
Well, it was kind of interesting. In America as a whole, in 1901, America had more post offices than at any other time in our history. And we had 80,000 post offices across America. Today, we have less than 38,000. So nationwide, we've lost about 63,000 towns or little settlements. So in Minnesota, I've actually discovered, and that's one of the things I should tell people, is write the stories down, because some towns left nothing. We know that there was a post office there, and that's about all we know. But now I found about 250-300 in northern Minnesota, and about 225 in central Minnesota. And in southern Minnesota, now I'm writing that book right now, I'm finding about 300.
Wow.
And that's just ones I can find information on. I'm sure there's probably double that I can't find anything on.
Well, and that's kind of a point I wanted to ask you about, too. How do you go about researching ghost towns? How do you find them?
Actually, I have an old map, and I go through and I pick out the towns, and then I go through a process. I have to check to see if they were incorporated, if they have a city or town government. That's a little bit confusing, too, because Minnesota has townships, and sometimes the town of so-and-so gets confused with the actual little settlement. But then I would kind of determine what I would what I could find, and I would call every historical society in Minnesota, and I would contact libraries, and I'd look at old newspapers and find every possible book on every county I could find, and just go through them to find anything on any town I could find. So, and most of the historical societies were wonderful. I had a hard time in the beginning defining what a lost town was, and I called one historical society, and she said to me, "Oh, you mean Polk and Plum towns?" And I go, "What's a Polk and Plum town?" And she goes, "Oh, you know those little roadside towns that by the time you poke your head out the window, you're plumb out of town?" And so that's kind of what I tell people. It's these little places that, you know, you kind of can tell something was there, but it's really nothing left.
Nice. Yeah. Well, that's what Jim was talking about when we were in this, having this conversation, because he has shown people where he lives now, and on Google Maps, the aerial view, you can kind of make out where the town was. There's still some stuff left over.
And sometimes you can see where the old railroad track used to go. You know, you can kind of see it from aerial photos, or where it was used to be too. And a lot of towns still, you know, they have different classifications of lost towns. There's like class A, which is barren land, and that's all that's there. You might have an idea of where the town once sat, and it goes all the way up to fully restored historic sites. And everything in between is a category. A through G is, they have categories. So.
Oh, wow. Yeah, well, that's keeping track of history. That's kind of an important thing.
and it's fascinating, because I think everybody has a lost town. You know, either somebody's parents or grandparents were born there, or you've driven through them, or you still live there. I still say I live by Lincoln, and even though Lincoln is no longer a town per se, but I still say I live there. So,
yeah, my father, he's from a place down in southern Illinois called Carmi. And I remember visiting my grandparents down there when I was really young, and then they moved elsewhere, and after my grandfather passed. But not too recently, a few years ago, just a little family vacation, we passed back through there. And I kind of looked around, and I was just like, what do these people do? I mean, how is there still a town here? I don't understand what's going on. So,
yeah, that's why I think everybody has one that they have in their history somewhere. It's one of the best parts about going to do some of the presentations is I get to meet a lot of people. And it's really fun, because people reading the book or my telling the stories, it brings back these memories, especially for older folks. Like I have... They, as soon as I start telling the stories, they'll come up with, oh, yeah, and then they tell the best stories.
Oh, yeah. Because they remember. Once you start somebody going, then of a sudden.
Yeah, it's kind of like a little memory jogger. And I've had some people write and say, oh, thank you so much. I've had the best visit with my father that I've ever had. You know, because it sparked something, and he would tell them about his childhood in that town or something. And so that's been real fun. That's the best part, being able to spark those memories and saving. I kind of consider them saving these little towns. When I'm long gone, somebody might pick up this book and say, oh, my grandfather was from, you know, it keeps them alive a little bit.
Nice. Well, speaking about the book, how many of these books do you have out, and, well, what are they called?
The series is called Minnesota's Lost Towns, and I started in May 2014 with Northern Part 1. It's called Northern, Minnesota's Lost Towns Northern, and it had about 125 towns, and it's really interesting. And then as I started to travel, people would say, have you heard of this town? Have you heard of this town? And so I found another 125 Northern towns with enough information. So I came out with Northern 2 this past May, and then I came out with Central Minnesota this past May also. 2 came out this year. So right now I have 3. Next spring, we're hoping to have Southern Minnesota towns, which will be the 4th, and then I'm going to finish up with Wisconsin, because I want to pay tribute to my grandparents and my family, because that's where I first fell in love with lost towns. So
excellent. So what's maybe one of the coolest towns you've run across? What really kind of because, you know, the ghost towns, they're very, there's this romanticism about it and everything, but what makes is there one out there in particular that you just absolutely love?
There's a couple of them in northern Minnesota. One's called Craigsville. It was way up in Coochaching County. It was in the 1930s, and it was a logging town. And there were about 2,000 loggers in the area, but it was just a rootin' tootin' Wild West town, kind of. For 2,000 people in the area, the town had 47 taverns, we think. and there were, they had a... a madam up there who was quite a character, Peggy. They called her Pretty Peggy. And I kind of like that one, too, because if you ever watch the opening credits of the TV show Cheers, they use a picture from Craigsville in that opening credits.
Wow.
And so that one was kind of fun. And I have a picture in there. It shows a bar scene from Craigsville. And it was just, you know, just a wild town. Then the people that populate them, like in northern Minnesota, like there was another one called Lothrop up by Walker, and they had a lady of the night who was named Mustache Liz. And her story's kind of tragic almost, but she's such a wonderful character, and I love sharing the stories of those people. So.
Oh, nice. Well, what happened to Mustache Liz then?
She eventually... She ends up staying in Lothrop after the railroad town moves on. It was the end of the line, logging railroad town. She ends up staying there, and it's a long story, but she ends up getting gangrene in 1931, and they take her to the hospital in Walker, and they give her a competency test. Back in those days, they gave you a competency test to see if you were of sound mind. And that was partially written, and she never learned how to read. So she failed that test miserably, and they moved her to Fergus Falls Mental Hospital, where she died.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah. But it's just she just tried to live life the best way she could, and life got in the way.
You're in tune to 88.1 FM KVSC and the Untold Stories of Central Minnesota. Today, we're talking with Rhonda Fox, author of 3 books with 2 more in the making, Minnesota's Lost Towns. Rhonda's going to be at the Morrison County Historical Society in Little Falls on a Sunday, September 27th, and then at the Public Library in Long Prairie on October 7th. And now we get back into it with a discussion about what causes some towns to become a ghost town and what allows others to thrive and continue.
Yeah, because a lot of, I think what made some of these towns, you know, just, you know, kind of what we've said before, you know, the transportation really isn't there. The, what else is there around? It's like you do whatever you're doing. You've got your job, your family,
right.
And, you know, you're there. So.
Right. And it's kind of in a way, too. I like it because Minnesota is one of the first things they ever built. And every town was a church and a school. And to me, that's kind of, you know, showing you what's important. Of course, the 3rd, 4th, 5th, 6th thing they built was a tavern. But but the school and the church were always so important. And that's what, you know, but I think sometimes even nowadays we have the potential to kind of do small towns a disservice. And I do it myself. We will go to a larger town to shop. You know, we won't stop at the local hardware store sometimes or the local grocery store. And we go to 30 miles away because things are cheaper. And it's a fact of life. You have to go where things are cheaper. But sometimes those small businesses and small towns can't compete with that.
Absolutely. A long time ago, I lived in a place called Riverside, Iowa.
Okay.
It's about, 10, 15 miles south of Iowa City.
Okay.
And it was a small farming town. My landlord was the butcher in town and all that. But with the 80s farm crisis that happened, a lot of people lost their farms. A lot of people just they had to leave, you know, and a lot of them went up just up to Iowa City. Someone went down to Washington, Iowa. But the town just, you can see the storefronts are still there. There used to be something there.
And so tragic to see. And it's like, gosh, the lost towns almost remind me too of, you know, everybody who lived in those towns had hopes and dreams just like we do.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, something went wrong and those dreams died and faded away and they had to get up and start over again. They always do, which is great for the human morale, but it's still kind of a tragic ending to a dream these towns are.
Oh, absolutely. Well, this little town of Riverside, I mean, it was a very quaint town and they survived. And this is an interesting little quirk. Back in the 80s, there was, the Star Trek movies that were out.
Okay.
I believe it is in Star Trek 4, where they go back in time. And at some point, this woman asks James Kirk, are you from outer space? And he says, no, I'm from Iowa. Well,
oh, really?
He never says where he's from in Iowa. So the town of Riverside, as it's dying, they decide, hey, why don't we just proclaim ourselves the future birthplace of James T. Kirk? And
very cool.
They voted on it. They did it. And now there's a little Star Trek convention thing that comes through every year. And, of course, now they've also got a casino down there, too.
Yeah.
But it's one of those things. It's like you've got this town and, you know, it's a very beautiful little place. And, you know, some of these folks, I think, they decide to fight for the town. And then, well, there we go. So,
yeah. It's a kind of a classic American story, you know, just that building of that dream and recreating everything or repurposing everything. So,
yep, just keeping the thing going. Absolutely. So, let's see here. You've got a couple of different speaking engagements coming up. Up in Little Falls, that's this Sunday.
Sunday night at Morrison County Historical Society. Great society. They've been a really big help with finding information and photos and everything and helping with the TV production. And I just love sharing the history with the folks. And it's a topic that everybody really seems to like. Just like you, as you said, in Riverside and stuff, you have these towns in the back of your mind when you spark the memories, just think of the things that come alive because of it.
Mm-hmm. All sorts of things.
Yes, I am at the Morrison County. I believe it starts social hour, I think, is at 6:30. Sunday evening, and then at 7 is their short, very short annual meeting, and then I'm going to do about an hour-long presentation. So,
yep, I think that's what it says up on the website there. That's Charles A. Weyerhauser Memorial Museum on South Lindbergh Drive there up in Little Falls.
Correct, and it is free of charge, and they're going to have light refreshments. The staff is really setting up very nicely, so...
Very cool. And I believe you also said that you're going to be out in Long Prairie at some point, too?
Yes, in Long Prairie on October 7th, I'm going to be at the library out there. I think that program, I believe, starts at 5:30 on October 7th, a Tuesday night.
Nice, nice, nice. As people are exploring for ghost towns, what are some of the things they need to look out for? Are some of these places dangerous?
I don't know if I'd say dangerous, just because of their historical thing and stuff. A lot of them are very vulnerable places. So, you know, if you'd ask, you know, if it's a lot of these are on private property, please don't go on private property without asking the property owner. When you go there, take only pictures. Don't take anything else or upset any foundations or anything. And basically just good common sense. You know, these are very historic sites, and, you know, weather and nature and human beings trotting all over aren't going to do them any favors. So,
absolutely. But it's almost like being an archaeologist in a way.
It is, in a way, you know, in Minnesota. In Minnesota, we have a very harsh climate, very harsh winters, and very humid, hot summers. So nature reclaims these things very, very quickly. And but it is like an archaeological, and you can just imagine. And then, and in the book, it has a lot of then and now pictures, so you can kind of compare what they look like now and what they look like back then. And sometimes it's amazing to see the difference.
Yeah, photography was definitely coming about then. Yeah, that's one of those things. We kind of take it for granted. There's a little stat I saw on the internet that, you know, more pictures are taken in like a month or 2 days than in the entirety of like the 19th century.
Yes, and that's what one woman said to me too. She goes, you know, we just never took pictures. Photography was so expensive that you couldn't take pictures of just anything. And she would even said, she goes, you know, even a lot of the times you wouldn't take pictures of your relatives unless they died unexpectedly or something, and that was the only picture you could take. You know, so film was so expensive to get now and get developed back then and stuff. And now we just have the capability. We sometimes forget to do that. And another thing like that is we do so much communication by texting and emailing that someday when somebody wants to come back and look at our civilizations, what are they going to find? You know, we didn't write letters. We didn't, you know, leave too much of a record behind that's written paper.
Yeah, all of a sudden somebody's going to run into a, you know, like a blank spot.
Right, right. And they're, you know, I don't know. Are you going to be able to have computer technology to read the things people left behind? Or, you know, just like now, I depend upon letters that people wrote or pictures that were found or summaries that people wrote up or town histories from 100 years ago. And if we're not producing them, the historians of the future are going to have a hard time.
Absolutely.
And that's a plug, too. Historical societies are great. Morrison County, they have so much on not just lost towns, but the history of an area and the history of a people. And go there, you know, support those local libraries and those local historical societies, because they are the keeper of our history. And without people keeping the past alive, we're not going to have a future history. So,
yeah, that's something definitely in our grand era of technology. We kind of forget about that. Sometimes those little pieces of paper, that means a lot.
Yeah, just some of the things I found were just tiny little things tucked away somewhere or something. And, you know, without that, we wouldn't, like I said, there's postal records and that's about it for some towns.
Yeah, and then it's like, it's like you're on a treasure hunt.
It is. And whenever I find one, I go, oh, yeah, I found a new town. And I feel just like I'm saving it and I'm fascinated because I have this new one that I discovered. And
Excellent. Well, anything else you want to say about anything?
No, if they get a chance to come out to Little Falls, that'd be great. And also, I do have a website. It's rhondafochs.weebly.com. You can learn more about the books there, and I have some little information and history there. And also, it gives you an option to leave your story if you'd like to tell us about your lost town. And I have had people email me and say, what about this town? And then they share their photos and stuff. So people are very willing to share, and that's something too. History is for everyone. It shouldn't cost people to save history. So,
excellent. Yep, and we'll link to that off of our website as well.
Okay, great.
So. Hey. Well, Rhonda, thank you very much for talking with me today.
Thanks, Sue, and I'll be looking forward to hearing you.
Once again, we've been talking with Rhonda Fox on the Untold Stories of Central Minnesota. Rhonda will be discussing her books, Minnesota's Lost Towns, at the Morrison County Historical Society, at the Charles A. Weyerhaeuser Memorial Museum in Little Falls on Sunday, September 27th, beginning at 6:30 p.m., and then out in Long Prairie at the Public Library on October 7th. For more information on Rhonda Fox, her website is at Rhonda Fox, spelled F-O-C-H-S, .weebly.com. And you can find links to her website on our website at kvsc.org under the Podcasts and Untold Stories of Central Minnesota link. This has been Arts and Cultural Heritage producer Jeff Carmack, and the Untold Stories of Central Minnesota is made possible through funding from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. It has been produced at KVSC, a proud member of AMPERS, diverse radio for Minnesota's communities.